everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, the CEO, the COO, the Q here at Inside the Ropes. And I'm joined by our Vice President of Podcast Relations, Sandra. Hi, Sandra. How are you?
Hi, Kenny. I feel like my title changes every single time. Well, we need an org chart here at Inside the Ropes.
We do. I am currently in this very weird mood because I'm watching this show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why, which is like one of the best TV shows I've seen in years. But it's very, very dark and it's very depressing. And it's about teen suicide. And it's like, it's flashbacks of why the teenager committed suicide. It's just real dark.
So it's one I've of heard a lot of criticisms of that show being too like pro-suicide.
I don't think it is. I mean, I've not felt that way.
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I saw a lot of people in mental health community questioning the show, and
I think the issue with it is that it's very raw, which I think is difficult sometimes to. But it's one of those things where I'm like, oh, I really want to watch the rest of it because I really want to see what happens, but it's not making me happy. It's very weird. Anyway, that's my day.
Well, no, I mean, it's not exactly the happiest subject matter.
No, like it's like you don't watch. You don't go, oh, I want a really good comedy. I'll watch Monster with Charlize Theron. Yeah, I mean, you don't think that. That's the movie where she plays the serial killer who gets raped when she's younger. Just in case Sandra had not seen that, because Sandra...
Oh, of course I haven't. I had no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm just filling you in.
Thank you.
Also, I put a poll out on the Facebook page yesterday because I kind of forgot that, like, I guess technically we are due to do 7 days, seven podcasts next week, and I just didn't feel like it was kind of not
honestly worth. Until I saw that post, it had not crossed my mind once. Because if I would have thought of it, I would have been like, "Hey, Kenny, are we doing 7?" No, like for this SummerSlam, it just didn't occur to me that we would even do that. Because why would we? Because the SummerSlam, I don't think it's terrible, but it doesn't feel like a big deal. It doesn't feel like a build to the biggest party of the summer. It just feels like another show that's going to be way too long and probably kill my soul.
Do you think the part of that's because it's no longer the biggest party of the summer? It is now the biggest event of the summer. It's no longer a party. They've killed their own
summer. Well, I mean, really, they're devaluing themselves right there. I mean, I look forward to SummerSlam being a party. I don't just want an event. An event sounds like something you go to at a conference center where, you know, you have like stale crackers or something and someone gives a presentation probably on a subpar medium to PowerPoint, just because I like PowerPoint and I didn't want to disparage its good name.
What a random love of Microsoft there.
Well, I mean, Drew Gulak has instilled in me a love for PowerPoint presentations and I won't go back. But yeah, just the biggest event of the summer that just sounds so stale and boring.
Yeah, and the other thing is obviously, Sandra and David kind of rope in whenever we're doing shit like that, but I kind of have to be on most of them, and I was just kind of I don't really know if I... So anyway, I put the thing out, and I was like, you know, what do you guys want? Do you want the regular podcast? Do you want 7 days, or do you want regular plus one? So we listen to the people. We have to listen to the people. So two people wanted just regular Inside the Ropes weekly podcast. Those two people who do not enjoy any more fun are Connor Tweedy and Adam James, dying of fire. 20 people wanted 7 days, 7 podcasts.
I don't think they should die in a fire. They are saving us work.
Well, you're about to hear in a minute. It's not saving you any work. It is saving you work, actually. Well, you don't have to do any more work. I need to do more here in this scenario. Well, you may. Anyway, let me say it. So
I usually end up doing more work for SummerSlam because you're away on holiday, so...
Oh, that's nice. Well, and then this year, they're not even doing a 2K party. Just found that out today.
Because they're anti-party and anti-fun, apparently.
Yeah, no nibbles for me this year. Anyway, there is a drinks mixer. You know, I can't really... Anyway, it's very weird when they go, there's a drinks mixer for international media, and you're like, okay, cool, but you can't interview anybody. So you're just like there getting drunk when there's wrestlers around. I mean, I know this is third world problems, right? But anyway.
Honestly, that doesn't sound all bad, Kenny.
No, it's fine.
I love it. It's fine.
I'm not complaining. However, so...
Skybox over here. Jeez,
159 people voted for regular weekly podcasts, but one weekend bonus show. So, here's what we're going to do. We'll have the Raw Rundown, the SmackDown Summary, the Retro Raw Rundown, and the Power Slam podcast, and then on the weekend, in addition to the glorious Sunday NXT TakeOver review that Sondra and I will be handling, on the Saturday, there will be another podcast. It will be a bonus. It will be for SummerSlam weekend. And I don't quite know what recipe I'm going to use.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the reason I now say that that's not going to give Sondra any extra work, if I know Sondra and she's free, she will elbow her way into that one. So I'm just I'm just being prepared. So, yeah, that'll be next weekend. So, there's an extra one. I'm happy with that.
That sounds good to me. I don't know what we would talk about for 7 days, seven podcasts. I mean, even like this past WrestleMania, there was a lot of build, there was news, there was stuff. For SummerSlam, I just don't know if I'm feeling it. And maybe that's part of the issue is when we do 7 days, seven podcasts, even for builds to dreadful shows, it helps get people more in the mood for it. So I guess there's that, but there is also a lot of content that we put out and it's a lot to catch up on. And I don't know. No one really feels like they're in the super SummerSlam mood, right? Like, I mean, I'm getting really excited for TakeOver because TakeOver looks like it's going to be good, but SummerSlam itself, there's some stuff on this episode of SmackDown that we're going to discuss that does make me excited for SummerSlam. There are two matches that I'm looking forward to at SummerSlam, one in particular, but other than that, it's just kind of like it's going to be 4 hours of bleh.
Five
hours of bleh.
Well,
it's so long, Kenny.
Six and a half or seven.
So long.
Well, because you get the pre-show as well.
I hate the pre-show. Can Finn Balor and Baron Corbin be on the fucking pre-show this time?
Do you know what I want to do? I want to show WWE an episode of Sunday Night Heat from 1998 or 1999, like right before a pay-per-view, like on the night of a pay-per-view, and just go, this is what you do, fucking people. You do angles on the show, and then you go, oh, I really want to see what happens, and then you buy the pay-per-view! It's not hard.
Yeah, it would make more sense.
Wait a minute.
They think that they're doing that with these panel discussions that just bang on for ages and ages and ages. Wait, is it going to be a two-hour pre-show for SummerSlam? Is it going to be a six-hour extravaganza like it is for WrestleMania that turns into 7 hours and by the end of it I'm dead?
Yes.
Ugh.
Sondra's going to exclusively for about 30 minutes cover the pre-show of SummerSlam, and then David and I will join in for the main show.
What?
With
my luck, they're probably going to put something I want to see on the pre-show again, because for Extreme Rules, the pre-show was actually my favorite part, so I'm glad that I watched it. I'm glad that I talked about it.
What was that?
Because I really enjoyed the pre-show. It could have been half an hour. Like, it could have just been the two matches, not all the panel discussion.
What was the match?
Andrade Cien Almas versus Sin Cara was very good. And then it was Sanity versus The New Day.
Right. Now, I'm not disparaging any of those four acts in any way, shape, or form. But, like,
did you expect me to not remember what they were?
No. I totally knew you'd remember. But, like, the whole idea of like Sunday Night Heat or the free for all or a pre-show or whatever is that you do something to make people want to watch the show.
Yeah.
And having these two matches, while they might have been very good, like, because you've told me they were very good, right? But
yeah,
there's no need for me to go and watch it. There's nothing happened there that I don't feel like I'm caught up on everything. Do you know what I mean? Whereas, like, I remember in the 90s, in late 90s, I mean, it was rubbing it in my face because I lived in the UK and didn't get to see it, but you'd have like a thing where they go, oh, you know, Vince McMahon was attacked on Heat, and then this is going to change this for this match. And then you missed something. And you go, all right, okay. If I was in America, I'd have been like, oh, well, I should watch that next month because then I need to see what's going to happen. So I feel they need to start doing angles in the pre-show, if I'm honest. Like an angle that, I mean, they did one at Survivor Series last year where they like put Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in a match with Breezango out of nowhere.
Yeah, which was fun.
Somebody did bring up, you know, would you...
They did do the beating up Brian and Kane thing. Was that on the pre-show or was that on the show? I can't remember.
That was the show.
Oh.
It just all blends into one. Anyway, somebody had mentioned, oh, if you're not doing 7 Days 7 podcasts for SummerSlam, will you do it for Survivor Series? Listen, if Survivor Series feels like a WrestleMania, sure. I don't think that's going to be the case. But Unless, well, I'm just looking forward to how this year they get to gang warfare. Like, what happens?
It better not be Shane McMahon leading the charge again, because that just made me too angry last year.
I mean, he's not even there anymore.
To be fair, I haven't complained. I haven't missed him. I really haven't.
I would much rather Shane McMahon's style of commissioning than Stephanie's.
Well, obviously.
But I mean, that anyway. So, let's move on. SmackDown.
There's a reason I'm not watching Raw regularly.
To be fair, there was some stuff on Raw this week that was dynamite.
I did watch the Paul Heyman interview.
And there was a great sit-down thing with Roman as well. It was really good. They kind of like.
I mean, I only have so much time.
It did make it seem like the Roman and Brock feud was like a feud for the ages, but at the same time, it was really good. SmackDown this week from Orlando, Florida, the Amway Center. We were there last year.
We were.
Decent snacks. Went right home about it. Randy Orton's music hits to open the show. He comes out, booed heavily, talks about the brutality that he did to Jeff Hardy, shows a video package of it. He was saying, like, you know, his goal is to break down people's heroes, wipe away their identities, be so violent that people change the channel. It will erase anyone who the fans love. He listed all his career highlights, like Money in the Bank, WrestleManias, Royal Rumbles, 13-time champion. He doesn't get the respect that he deserves. People can call him all these names that is, you know, nicknames, but the only three letters that anyone needs to remember is RKO. Drops the mic and leaves. Orton's killing it with these promos.
It was good. It was really, really good. He's like, you people still believe in superheroes. And I'm like, I feel personally attacked by you right now, Randy Orton. You damn right I believe in superheroes, and you're not going to take them away from me, you cretinous human being. He's awful. He is an awful person. And, I mean, some of the stuff he says, I understand why he'd be angry about not getting respect and all of that. But he is a terrible person, and I want to boo him heavily. And the rest of the crowd is booing him heavily, and it's lovely. And the story is really, really good. Like him erasing Jeff Hardy's identity, and how does Nakamura fit in with everything because they seem kind of intertwined, and who's Randy Orton going to go after next? I don't know. Like, there are possibilities here. And that's not something I've said about Randy Orton in a very long time. I just wanted him to go away. Like, I didn't miss him when he was gone, but he's actually an important part of the show right now and is adding value. And I really just want to see him get beaten and punched in the face.
So, yeah, I guess he's doing his job. Then we go cut backstage to Charlotte and Becky. They run into each other. Charlotte says, you know, she didn't want to ruin her moment, but she's competitive. You know, she's got to take the opportunity put in front of her. Becky understands. She did want Carmella to herself, but now there's a tall, blonde boulder in her path, but she doesn't hold it against her. Charlotte asked, are we okay for the tag match? And Becky was like, I mean, we're not Bayley and Sasha. And a little bit of shade there, and that leads us into the match. What did you make of the promo?
The promo I thought was good. I think they highlighted the tension between them well, but it didn't seem like Bayley and Sasha, right? I thought it was actually pretty well done, because it's awkward, right? Like, Charlotte didn't super deserve to be put in this match at all. So I can understand why Becky's a little miffed, even though I still have that hang up about, like, a triple threat kind of helps Becky in a way because Carmella loses her championship advantage. But I guess we're just ignoring that fact in WWE because wrestling, I don't know. Like, I've always just hated that whole, if there are more people in the match, then you have less of a chance to win. Well, no, not if you're better. But, Becky's kind of like complimenting Charlotte, being like, you know, you are a formidable opponent and now you're in my way. And Charlotte's like, you know, they're not taking digs at each other, right? They're like, no, we are still friends. Like, I am annoyed that you're in my way. And Charlotte's like, I feel kind of bad for stepping into your spotlight, but also I'm not going to say no. Like, if I get this golden opportunity, then I'm not going to say no to it. So I liked that. And then the burn to Bayley and Sasha, it made me chuckle, and it made me so, so sad for the state of Bayley and Sasha, because, again, TakeOver Brooklyn 1, my favorite match of all time, always will be. Oh, boy, are we in a far cry from that right now. So
this must be like your Hogan.
Yeah. I mean, without the racism, but yeah.
So then we get Becky and Charlotte against the Iconics. The Iconics do a promo before the match that the crowd just did not really care about.
They were so anti the Iconics. They were chanting boring at them. Like, they didn't boo them. They chanted boring, which I don't think the Iconics are boring.
I think the problem is that they've not been... It's not like their act has been consistently on TV every week doing this stuff. So they've not done it in a while. So, like, maybe people who are at the show didn't know their shtick and just thought these are Australian women sounding annoying. I mean, are they chatting boring?
Maybe, but they're in Orlando. Like, of all of the places that should be familiar with the Iconics, Orlando should be familiar with the Iconics.
I mean, maybe 400 of the 10,000 people would have known.
True.
But... I don't. I guess it's. Is it? Are they same boring in the storyline sense of they're supposed to dislike them, or are they? Are they like go away? If they are like go away, I mean. So I was thinking this the other day. You know how I sometimes say like, a lot of the kind of like some of the women and the new wrestlers like they don't do much for me.
And, right.
And I was watching like Retro Raw last week, and I was kind of like, but the wrestling here half the time isn't that great. So what is the difference? What am I? What is it? And I think what it is. Is that, like, so nowadays, most of the stuff is focused on the wrestling, but that's the main focus. Like, the Iconics, if you were to add up their TV time, 80% of it is wrestling, which is the thing they're weakest at. Their mm-hmm. strength is their characters. And because we're not really seeing them in any stories where they're, like, getting to, like, I don't know, make their characters deeper or do more with it, that's maybe the problem. You know, it's like, I mean, there's no other way to make sense of why, you know, Mankind is an interesting character to me, but he's not an interesting character to me because there's loads of five-star matches happening. There's lots of story stuff that happens with him which makes him interesting. So I feel like maybe with people at the Iconics, like, they need to focus more on the story part of their character to try and get people invested in them, because...
Well, I think one of the problems is when people come up to the main roster is their characters get flattened out, right? Like, in NXT, they have this room to grow and build and be a thing, whereas they come to the main roster, they're like, okay, you do impressions, and that's what you do, and that's all you do. And so then they put that on Peyton and Billy, and Peyton and Billy are great at being annoying pricks and stuff, but they're not even really focusing on, like, the friendship between Peyton and Billy, or, you know, their motivations or their goals or their dreams as people. It's just... They come out, are annoying, do impressions, and then lose. And that's it. Or maybe they win every once in a great while, but, you know, like, it's kind of rinse and repeat with them. And I think, I mean, one of the examples I guess I could use, I don't really want to bring him up, but, like, Enzo Amore in NXT cut really clever promos, and then he came to the main roster and was fucking awful because they were like, okay, you talk, that's what you do, so do that for 10 minutes. And it worked in, like, 2 minutes. Snippets, right? It didn't work so well in 10-minute snippets where he just, like, went on and on and on and on and on and was the most annoying ever. So, and I mean, we see it with Bailey, right? Like, you hug and have a ponytail. That's not Bailey's character. If you look at her entire character arc in NXT, there's so much more to it than that. But you get to the main roster, you have to flatten it out, make it really palatable for audiences. But by doing that, it's like you're removing all of the flavor and all of the goodness that made them who they were before, you know? And I mean, we've seen it even with wrestlers who were fully formed before they came to WWE and whatnot. Like, they try to dumb them down or they try to, you know, flatten them out. And I think that's why a lot of stuff probably doesn't click for you, is because the characters feel flat and forced and sanitized instead of real and authentic and interesting a lot of the time, which is why when you get a really good, interesting, authentic feeling person, Samoa Joe, Miz, Daniel Bryan, then it really stands out on the main roster because we get it so rarely, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Yeah, because I think that is really it. It's like, you know, why am I so hard on people sometimes like the Iconics or like Carmella? And it's because most of the stuff now is based on actual wrestling. It's based now more on wrestling than it ever has been before. And it's like, I think sometimes when you've got somebody who's very experienced, even if they're not very good, they're experienced in how to kind of work a crowd, even mm-hmm. if they're not like great at wrestling. But when you've been working in like Full Sail or something, like you can say all you want about the experience that somebody gets in Full Sail, but those 400 people who the majority of the time are the same crowd, like, it's very different to going in front of 10,000 people. And I mean, you and I have both been at wrestling shows where you see people and you go, oh, you have no idea what's happening here.
Yep.
None. which I...
Yeah, and I think there is something to be said, and I think one of the detriments of Full Sail as a system is that people are wrestling the same people over and over and over, and they're wrestling in front of the same crowds over and over and over, too. So you're not getting that world exposure, which is where, you know, people who come in from the Indies or from overseas or something like that, they're getting different experiences instead of the same formulaic thing. Which is maybe why Full Sail doesn't turn out as many like great wrestlers. It's not necessarily detriment to the performers, but I mean, like you look at someone like Juice Robinson in New Japan. So I actually watched some New Japan for like the first time that I can recall yesterday. And it's crazy to see how much better he's gotten just like being in front of a different crowd, being in a different environment. Like when he was CJ Parker, I loved his hippie deal, but now he's like this mad pirate, crazy US champion person. And I mean, he's grown and flourished. And so it's one of those things where sometimes you just need to be in front of different audiences and have different opponents and get different experiences across the world. And that's kind of how you learn to feed off crowds of various sizes. Like, I mean, it's sometimes easier to feed off of a crowd of like 300 people because you can interact with them. There's a personal interaction. I like going to smaller shows much more than I like going to bigger shows because there's more of a personal connection to the wrestling that's happening. You know, WWE is a spectacle and it's fun to see the spectacle, but it's a lot of fun when you can yell at, you know, someone in the ring and be like, no, I hate you, Juan Francisco de Coronado. And he can yell back at me that, you know, I'm wrong. And he's the Ecuadorian aristocrat, that kind of thing. So I don't know. Like, I think that's where performers kind of learn and grow and change. And Full Sail doesn't necessarily give you that opportunity. I mean, they do tour around Florida, too. So they get some of it. But I think variety of opponents is one of the issues, too.
I would concur. Charlotte and Becky versus Iconics match goes about 8.5 minutes. It was fine. Charlotte and Becky get the win in the end. Any thoughts?
There was some good tag match stuff here. Becky Lynch versus Peyton Royce is a match I would be interested in seeing. I think that could be really good. Like as an actual thing, not just as part of a tag program. But I mean, it was what it was. And I guess it didn't really like highlight dissension between Charlotte and Becky, which I liked. You know, afterwards they're like, no, we are friends. We can be friends and still be in a title match against each other. This isn't like Retro Raw where, you know, The Undertaker and Steve Austin are tag partners, but they might hate each other. But yeah, like it's not that situation. They are actually friends. And the thing is, you can have friends fight each other in matches and that can be a story too. So I'm glad that they're not having Becky and Charlotte be snippy. I'm glad that they're not having them like, oh, all women be crazy and hate each other. It doesn't seem like they're falling into that trope too much. And I always worry about that with WWE because it seems like most of the stories they tell, especially in women's division, tends to just kind of be like, oh, well, of course they're not going to trust each other because these crazy ladies can't ever get along. No, I like the fact that Becky and Charlotte are friends. And I mean, that could all go horribly, horribly wrong at SummerSlam and lead to some really interesting story possibilities if Charlotte turns heel on Becky or if Becky turns heel on Charlotte. But it's simmering and it's building. And that's what I like about it.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine for me. But God, just... I just want better women's wrestling, Sandra. I just want better women's wrestling.
I mean, this wasn't bad. I don't know why.
It was fine, but it's like, remember when there was a period where like the women's stuff was great? Like, it wasn't just fine.
And in NXT, like, you mean?
Yeah, most of the time, yeah. Or like, you know, Sasha and Charlotte, when they were having their stuff on Raw for those first few months, was great. Like, yeah. And then but then
you fell into the trap of they were the only two that mattered and no one else got a spotlight. I like that they're using more of the roster. I mean, I would like to see Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose a little more often, mostly Sonya Deville. But, you know, like they're using more of the roster. And I think this is a good use of the Iconics because, like you say, they're not necessarily the best wrestlers. I mean, I think Peyton is actually pretty good. But
I think it's just because, like, it's like, you know, the story is Charlotte and Becky and kind of, you know, them being best pals, but they're both going to be in this title match with Carmella, and now they're fighting the Iconics, and then they're fighting Carmella, and it's like, can I just, like, once a month, just give me two really good women wrestlers and let me see them fight?
Well, I'm really hoping that after SummerSlam, we get Charlotte versus Becky, and then we will get exactly that.
setting yourself up.
But I don't want them to just fight each other over and over and over either. I want them to, you know, fight other people in the build to their feud. Like, that's one of the problems WWE has, is like when two people are in a feud, they just fight each other over and over and over and over and over. And then you get bored of it. I mean, AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, I can't believe that in the year of our Lord 2018, we're like, I never want to see them fight each other ever again.
Not even one right? more time.
No. And that match should have been amazing, and it wasn't. And it got better as things went on, but then it just happened so many times that you just get sick of it, right? Like, I want to go back to times when, you know, Witness in NXT. You don't see EC3 and Velveteen Dream having matches on NXT right now all the time. You see them having other segments together. You see them having confrontations. You see them fighting other people for momentum, for, you know, they're going to fight someone like, Sean Maluda or someone, because then they're like, hey, look, I want a match and I want a thing and I'm a formidable opponent. And that's the way to build stories, not just have people fight over and over and over, which is why I don't like the whole, you know, Becky got into the match with Carmella by submitting, in this case, Carmella. Charlotte got into the match with Carmella by beating Carmella. It's just such a tired trope that is called out later in the show. Wonderful
and, you know,
way.
And, you know, we're going to watch the Mae Young Classic soon, and then they're going to all practice their matches for about 5 days, so it'll look decent. And then probably I'll fall in love with someone who doesn't get hired or has an injury, and we'll be back there again.
But, I mean, you could always seek them out in their promotions where they work.
Yeah. I've only got so much time, Sandra.
I know, it's true. But, I mean, there is good women's wrestling to be seen. It's just, the main roster WWE is not the place for it. Like, if you want something that's really super excellent, main roster WWE is not the place for it. Unfortunately, that's the state of affairs that we live in, which is, I don't know, kind of soul crushing sometimes when you think about it. It's like, oh, this is the wrestling that I have to watch.
But have you seen the WWE exclusive video about NXT?
The Aleister Black one?
Yes.
Yes.
Parking lot?
Yes.
Okay, cool. An example there is like something they're doing where you go, right, okay, so they found out they've got an injury from somebody. How do they handle it? They do an attack. There's multiple people it could have been. You're interested. Do stuff like that. Like, I don't know, just come up with something.
No, but the thing is, that takes creativity and effort. And
they've got 27 people writing for them.
That's the problem, though. Like, there are too many people, and it's all too sanitized. It's, you know, it's put through too many filters, and then all of the flavor and all of the goodness and all of the actual authentic, I don't know, soul of the wrestling just kind of gets beaten out of it by the time it passes through all these filters. And the show doesn't feel consistent, because if you have multiple people writing different segments, then you're not going to get what feels like a fully formed world, because the segments don't touch each other, right? Which is, I mean, that's why I like when people like R-Truth interrupt, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, because it's not what you expect. It's random. It's like, this is weird. But of course, like, they're all backstage together. That should be a thing that happens. I like when Carmella and the New Day interact. I like when, you know, Braun Strowman is still talking about how he's a fan of Alexa Bliss because they were Mixed Match Challenge partners. That's the kind of stuff you want to see more of, but when everything is so segmented and sanitized and overproduced, you don't have that. It's a different type of program.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like this episode of SmackDown overall. It's just the women's thing right now is making me want to kill myself. Especially because in Raw, we've got Ronda and, like, Alexa, who are really, like, hitting it. Anyway.
I don't know. I'm a lot more invested in the women's stuff now that Charlotte and Becky are kind of the angle and Carmella is not the main focus. That's actually made it a lot more interesting for me, because Becky versus Carmella, like, I was just so happy to see Becky win a thing. But now that we have the possibility of Becky versus Charlotte, whether it's for the title or not, I don't know. I find that to be a lot more interesting. And there's so much talent on the SmackDown roster. Like, I think people give the Iconics a hard time, but they're not bad wrestlers. They're not like setting the world on fire with 5-star classics, but that's not their role.
I think the problem is that the best they're going to do is fine. And, like, you can be fine, but at some points you can be good. Like, you know, Mandy Rose, it's you can't expect her to give you great matches. She's not had enough in her career. So she's, you know, it's not her fault. But anyway, it's just, I don't know. It's doing my nothing.
I mean, I wouldn't complain about an injection of a little bit of Nikki Cross on the SmackDown roster.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Just, we know she's backstage. Just use her.
Get us some more stuff. The New Day are supposed to be interviewed by Renee Young, but Kofi puts on a blue jacket and a blonde wig and does a corny old man voice to interview Big E and Woods. Any thoughts?
It was fun. It was fine. It was New Day being silly.
Then we got Becky and Charlotte celebrating backstage. They agreed that they were great together, but then Becky says in 2 weeks it'd be different. Charlotte said that they would have to be great against each other. And then they kind of stared each other down a little bit. So friendly competition. Yay. Friendship.
I like friendly competition.
I'm agreeing with you. Friendly competition, yeah. I like it. It's good. AJ Styles.
And again, it's not devolving into we're going to stab each other in the back.
Because
no. Because we're ladies and we're crazy.
Up next we had AJ Styles. God bless AJ Styles. Like, you know, what a wrestler. Sometimes promos are hard. There was points.
Sometimes
here.
Promos are. What are you saying? I thought this promo was actually pretty decent.
It was good, but you could see there was points where he was kind of like trying to remember what he's supposed to say. Like, he's not a guy who's strong on like long promos in terms of, like, it's not his forte. But the good thing was, apart from that, whenever he did get into it, he was good. He talked about this thing with Samoa Joe, making it personal, all the sacrifices he makes for his family, missing birthdays and all that. He celebrated 18 years with his wife on August 5th. His wife's a single parent because he's not there. You know, he wants to give his kids what he didn't have. You know, he has to leave and, you know, watch them cry and all that kind of stuff. And then he said that's what pisses him off because Samoa Joe has been his friend for years. He's seen AJ's wife and kids and he knows the sacrifices he's made. But when he made that comment, he threw all the friendship away and he wouldn't let him walk out of SummerSlam with the title. In fact, he may not be walking out at all. So overall, good promo.
I think this was the best promo AJ Styles has done in a while.
Probably
I like the fact
stuff.
That... What?
Probably since his Cena stuff back in 2016.
Oh, yeah. Because it feels authentic, right? It feels like an actual person is saying these things. Because, of course, AJ Styles loves his family. Of course, he hates that he has to be away from his family. He is on the road a lot of the year because that's how WWE schedule works, right? And he's going to be away from them, and that sucks. And for Samoa Joe to bring that up is incredibly personal. Samoa Joe's an asshole for bringing that up, and AJ Styles rightfully is saying, you know, Samoa Joe's an asshole. I'm doing this for my family. It's because I love them that I have to hurt them, kind of, in a way. I don't know. And I like the fact that he brought up that he and Samoa Joe started the same way. They've been working together for so, so long. And, you know, talking about Samoa Joe throwing away a friendship with his callous remarks and all that kind of stuff, this makes the match personal. This is the match, other than Miz and Bryan, this is the only other match that I'm really looking forward to at SummerSlam. And I mean, I would like it to be the main event. I know that you said that all the Roman and Brock stuff on Raw made it feel like the main event. I don't know. Paul Heyman's promo was like really, really good, but it's still Roman and Brock to me. So,
yeah. I think what works for me in that is that, like, I agree the promo here was good that he cut, but I don't believe it. Like, I don't believe that. Like, I don't really believe that AJ Styles and Samoa Joe are not friends. Like, it's like I like the story enough, but I think what is kind of edging me on the Roman and Brock stuff is there's a lot of reality-based stuff in it, which has just kind of turned that over the edge. But that, I mean, I'm only really looking forward to four matches at SummerSlam. This is one of them. I think AJ, to give AJ his credit, I thought Joe's promo was good last week, but AJ's retort kind of made me interested. So
yeah,
that's a compliment to him.
I think they're feeding off of each other well, and I think they're both building the story effectively. It feels like they're talking and responding to one another instead of just talking into a void. And I like that. And I mean, wrestling wise, this is the match that I'm probably looking forward to the most because I think they could kill it. I don't know. Samoa Joe is incredible. I want Samoa Joe to win, obviously, but I think AJ Styles made me interested in AJ Styles for the first time in a very, very long time. And I think that's a credit to him. So, I really liked the promo. I thought it was good, and it made me more invested in the match.
Yes, and my four matches at SummerSlam that I'm looking forward to are Ronda and Alexa, Roman and Brock, AJ and Joe, and obviously Brian and Miz. So, we will get to the Brian and Miz one in a little bit. We get Rusev backstage. He's going to be in Lana's corner for the rematch against Zelina Vega. The match that everyone wanted a rematch of.
I mean, why is there a rematch of this?
I did like that Brian Alvarez just, like, because they'd announced on Twitter, you know, we're having a rematch. And Brian Alvarez just retweeted, $2 billion deal. Nobody cares. So Aiden English ended up walking up and apologized. They forgive him. Rusev told him it would be better if he maybe stayed backstage tonight. But he got forgiven, Sondra. All is good in the world.
He got forgiven. He did. And that was good. And Aiden should have stayed in the back. He should have listened. I mean, you know what's going to happen, because the same thing keeps happening over and over and over and over and over. And but I mean, I'm glad that they forgave him and they were willing to kind of talk it out. And Lana didn't be like, hey, fuck off, Aiden English. Like, Aiden really just wants to be their friend, you guys, and they need to be nice to him.
So then we got Lana versus Zelina Vega for 5 minutes. In the end, obviously, like you say, Aiden English ran down. Of course, his sort of attempt at interference backfires, and that allows Zelina Vega to hit the double knee thing for the win.
I think it was more effective at looking like it was Aiden's fault this week than it was last week, I think. Like, even though the timing of it was really off and kind of wonky and didn't necessarily flow, the fact that, did he hit Andrade into Lana or something?
Yeah.
So then Lana fell and then got beaten. So that made a lot more sense than, like, he was in her general direction and she was so distracted that she lost the match. Like, that's just Lana's fault. But this time it was Aiden actually kind of like pushing Andrade and hitting Lana and that kind of stuff. And I just wish he would have stayed in the back this time. Like, it's getting to the point where, like, Aiden, honey, you're not helping your case.
Yeah. So
like, he's trying too hard. He's like Chris Farley in Tommy Boy, where he just like pets the role and then it breaks and everything goes terribly, terribly wrong. I just want them to be friends, Kenny. I just want them to be friends, and I want him to start singing intros again and singing Rusev Day. And I'm scared that won't happen.
It's very rare for you to do a movie reference. Yeah, I mean, the fact that Lana and Zelina Vega is a match in a main roster show is its own problem for 2 weeks in a row. But the positive I'll give it is, although the wrestling is something I'd never need in my life, I like the angle that they're doing. So I like the angle. That's something. Move on.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I like Rusev and Lana and Aiden, hopefully, against Andrade and Zelina. Like, I like that story. If it gets us more Rusev versus Andrade as well, then I'm very okay with that.
Yeah, get that back,
match
please.
Was super good. Lana wrestling Zelina Vega is not something I need to see over and over and over, for sure. But I mean, it's a good story, though.
What I do need to see, though, is when Nakamura's getting interviewed by Renee Young about his match with Jeff Hardy at SummerSlam, R-Truth walks up. He wants a match with Nakamura at SummerSlam. And when he was asked how he was going to do it, he said, I'm going to pin Carmella like everybody else, proving in one segment why he has a job.
R-Truth is incredible. R-Truth was my favorite part of SmackDown this week. Unironically, was my favorite part of SmackDown in the year of our Lord 2018. Like, what is happening? I don't know, but it was great. I thought Nakamura was great here, too. You know, when Renee Young says that he's going to be facing Jeff Hardy, he's like, Jeff Hardy's been erased. He's like, who? And Renee's like, I mean, he wasn't literally erased. And then he's just like, I understand metaphor, Renee.
He's the best. He's the
he's
best.
He's so smarmy, but yeah, like, and R-Truth and Ty Dillinger together, I really like. I think they play off of each other really, really well. Because Ty in the background is being like, R-Truth, don't do it, don't do it. And, you know, I mean, the audacity of R-Truth, who is barely on this show ever, just being like, I want a match at SummerSlam for that. I want to be U.S. champion. And Shinsuke is just like, how? Like, why? Why would you do this? I mean, there's already a match set. It's not just like disparaging R-Truth and saying, no, you suck. It's there's also already a match set with Jeff Hardy. So no, like, you can't just have that match. But yeah, R-Truth saying, I'm going to do it the same way everyone else does. I'm going to pin Carmella. And then when Shinsuke goes on to say something in Japanese, and I love that Ty's like, that's not how it works. You need to deal with that. He points and he's like, I'm not going to get in the ring with Renee. Like, I love that R-Truth is simultaneously calling out the details of the show and the tropes of the show, kind of like Kevin Owens has done in the past too. Like, I actually watched this program and I know how it works, but he gets the details mixed up.
Yeah, that's great.
It's so good. And then Shinsuke speaks to him in Japanese, and R-Truth just looks affronted. So I love that R-Truth can apparently understand Japanese all of a sudden. And he's like, I can't repeat it in public, but the match with Carmella is off. I want Shinsuke Nakamura tonight.
He is a treasure. He's an absolute treasure.
I honestly would have been okay seeing R-Truth versus Carmella. I kind of wanted to see it.
Byron Saxton has the scoop, everybody. An interview with The Miz, but The Miz is, of course, on the set of Miz and Mrs., not backstage in any way, shape, or form.
Which is the funniest thing in the world, right? Because there's not a set to Miz and Mrs. It's a reality show. Like,
life
your
is
set
your set.
Is where you go.
Yep. But Miz ends up calling him a secondary announcer. Byron then says, you know, we're now fourth season of Total Bellas has been announced. So, you know, what do you think about the Miz and Mrs.? Talks about how it got more viewers than all of Total Bellas season 3. Byron asked him about his match with Brian at SummerSlam. He says he's been carrying that subpar amateur for 8 years and was tired of listening to Brian call him soft. He really kind of got heated about how he feels about Brian. Brian needs a match with him, not the other way around. He's tired of talking about Brian. You know, he said he's playing catering, eating some kale chips or something, or telling people to fight for their dreams. And then out of nowhere, Brian appears out of the frame, attacks Miz, his bodyguards as well, and then Miz is able to grab like a vase and just smash it over Brian's head, and that was it. I thought this was excellent. Miz is just killing it right now. He also did a great interview on E, which is kind of around the internet as well, that people were talking about. It feels to me like Brian has still not re-signed his contract, just by the way this is being narratively told. But I guess we'll see. But if Miz is not challenging for the WWE title in the next 6 months, what even are we doing here?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, unless Samoa Joe just holds it and is the champion and they don't want to do heel versus heel, and I would understand that, but... I mean, Miz is incredible. He's absolutely incredible. And he's making a lot of valid points, but he's being such a dick about it, right? Because, I mean, he's calling out very valid things about Brian, but calling him an amateur and saying that he's been carrying him for 10 years. I mean, Byron actually mentioned original NXT, which just made my heart sing. Because, I mean, the story goes back to that. It
I mean,
really does. That's
they're,
not
they're,
just...
they're not allowing Brian any retorts to this, which is interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. And it's one of those things where, like, Brian should retort. And, I mean, he had the chance to retort a few weeks back, right? When Miz called him, you know, a nostalgia act and said that he's coasting on his greatest hits. And then Brian came out and all he did was, you know, knee Miz in the face and then chant yes, kind of proving Miz's point. But, I mean, Brian's getting fired up about all this stuff, too. And I like that Brian attacked Miz. Brian was... definitely provoked into attacking him in this instance. This isn't just like a babyface attacking from behind. Miz is being an absolute prick to him and, you know, like calling out his family and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, this is the match that I'm looking forward to the most at SummerSlam. This is the only one that has me really excited to see it. And it's a match I didn't think we'd have the possibility of seeing. I mean, not that we've never seen Daniel Bryan and The Miz before, but getting a payoff to some of this stuff that was built on Talking Smack a couple of years ago that Miz has been just like talking about in interviews everywhere. I mean, he had that great interview on E. He's had other great ones that I've watched too. And you can tell this actually gets to him. Like as a person, this stuff gets to him. And Miz is a constant worker. Like he's always promoting him and Daniel Bryan, like always. And he's excellent at it. Like I've heard people say that Miz, like he's a great talker, but he doesn't necessarily get you invested in the story. And I think that's bullshit. Miz has me completely 100% invested in this story. Daniel Bryan is still one of my very favorites and the best of us. And I mean, I want to see Bryan win. I want to see him come out triumphant, but I don't know. The whole thing is just so good. So good. And I didn't even have a problem with the fact that Brian and Miz touched before SummerSlam because it was just kind of, it wasn't like an actual match, you know, it wasn't like a fight. It was, I don't know, we've seen Brian and Miz fight before, so it's not like this is the first time they've ever touched and they ruined it. I don't know, it's just, it's good. I'm babbling, but it was excellent.
It's fine.
And I can't wait.
So I literally have 5 minutes where I need to run, so we're gonna go speed up a little bit for this last section. But I do just want to say two matches, if I had to narrow it down to the two I'm looking forward to the most at SummerSlam, it's Brian and Miz and Roman and Brock. And I think it's because there's realistic elements in both. whether it's Heyman and Lesnar leaving, or Heyman, you know, splitting off from Lesnar, and then with the Miz and Bryan stuff, it's, you know, it was rooted in how Miz really felt. And then Bryan might be leaving. So there's all these kind of like other elements, which to me, just for me as a fan, make me a little bit more interested. So we shall see how they do. We get Shinsuke Nakamura versus R-Truth. R-Truth does his What's Up entrance. Nakamura is very impatiently waiting for him. And then R-Truth does an encore, which actually pops Nakamura, which makes me laugh. And then we got Nakamura versus R-Truth. 5-minute match. Nice TV win for Nakamura.
I thought it was really good, too. R-Truth can go. R-Truth is 46 years old, and he looks incredible. I don't like that he's changed the lyrics to his song, because there's, like, a comfort in the What's Up song, and me knowing every word to it,
wow,
and now I don't know every word to it.
There's a comfort in the What's Up song.
Well, there is. But, no, I mean, this was great. Again, R-Truth was the best part of SmackDown for me, and I don't even know what's happening there. But I thought Shinsuke Nakamura and R-Truth was a good match, and obviously a strong win for Nakamura. But R-Truth got in some offense, and I really liked it.
Yeah, you had that match with Joe and then the match with Nakamura. I think he's quite a good TV character to have for, like, you know, heels to build up some wins. Because he's fun as well. Then we got the Bludgeon Brothers beating a couple of jobbers who were called 3SK. Well, three guys called 3SK. And they just killed them, did the powerbomb finish, and win in a minute and 48 seconds. They're your boys. They won.
They did win. I don't have anything more to say about that, other than Luke Harper is a fine specimen of a human being, and why isn't he doing something other than this?
I love that there's real heartbreak in that the Bludgeon Brothers are not very good as characters, and so I'm just kind of heartbroken about it.
I am heartbroken about it, because I love them so much.
Who knew that a Timmy Mallet was going to... Well, I mean, do you know, at least they used the mallet recently on Kane.
Yeah,
they used the mallet on a mayor. Anyway,
he wasn't the mayor yet.
Mayor Kane. Did you see when he did his acceptance speech, they played his music to bring him on stage? So good.
No, I didn't, but that's great.
The main event is New Day versus The Bar. They go about 20 minutes. It was a really fun tag team match. Really good stuff. These teams work so good together. But in the end, the New Day hit the midnight hour. Get the win. They're going to SummerSlam to face Harper and Rowan. What did you make of this main event?
This was excellent. I mean, the tag team division in SmackDown is really good in terms of having really talented teams who are great at wrestling each other in any combination. So, I mean, I kind of wish the tournament would have been a little bit longer, but I guess that is what it is. But yeah, the matches are so, so good. And New Day and Bar are so, so good together in any combination again. Like, I just want to see Biggie Langston and Cesaro just wrestle each other a lot. I'd be very okay with that. This was great. There were so many good spots and near falls, and I bit for all of them toward the end, because I didn't know how much longer the match was going to go, because I, you know, watched it later and I wasn't checking timestamps because I was just invested and into the match. And this was excellent wrestling, and I really wanted the Bar to win. So I was a little bit disappointed that the New Day won, but New Day versus the Bludgeon Brothers should be good. I really hope that we don't just get like a squash again, like at WrestleMania, because that will break my heart. I think that Biggie Langston and Luke Harper could wrestle each other really, really well. And there are possibilities. I just want something to happen with the Bludgeon Brothers where maybe they just go and have a meeting at Eric Rowan's Vineyard and decide to be Wyatt's again and not this. Like, just something else so that Luke Harper can wrestle really, really good matches.
Yeah, great match. New Day and Bludgeon Brothers should be good. I hope we get new tag team champions. That's my hope. Where's your thumb for this episode of SmackDown, Sandra?
I think this one is a thumbs up for me. It's like leaning toward thumbs in the middle. Like, well, actually, maybe it's more of a thumbs in the middle, because none of it was bad, but I just don't know how much was advanced. But I think, like, R-Truth and the really excellent tag match at the end kind of make it veer more toward thumbs up.
I'm going to go thumbs in the middle, just because the women's stuff is really doing my nut in on SmackDown right now. And I was going to put it thumbs up for the Aiden English stuff, but ultimately it's going to bring me heartbreak, so I'm not doing it. So yeah, thumbs in the middle for me. But, you know, easy watch as always. Sondra Ruth RW on Twitter, KennyMC1985, insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets for tickets to Pat Patterson or Edge. That's it, I think.
Patreon?
patreon.com/insidetheropes for an NXT review, Power Slam Overrun, Sunday Night Heat podcast, Pod of Thunder, all that good stuff. Pod of Thunder returns on Thursday or Friday tomorrow, and I'm sure they will be as offensive as they possibly can be, so that's why they're behind a paywall. So, whose song's playing us out, Sandra?
I think we should play the New Day song.
It's a New Day, yes it is. We will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
It's a new day, yes it is! Stop till you reach the top, and while them haters keep hating, you'll be winning a race.